you, friend. Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Thank y'all. Excuse me. That's not a good way to start out. Okay. Thank y'all for having me. I am so excited to be here. I get to speak to a lot of different people on a lot of different topics, but hands down, without a doubt, my favorite is to speak to young moms like y'all. Because I love talking about the gift of motherhood. Because it's a gift, y'all. It really is. I believe with all my heart that there is no greater responsibility than the raising of the next generation. There is no greater privilege than the gift of being a mom. There really isn't. I want you to know that I stand here today as an imperfect mom with very imperfect children. Matter of fact, I about came up here with my zipper down till this nice lady said, "Hey, your zipper's down." I am not perfect. Although I love being a mom to adult children, I really, really do. There are many times that I wish I could go back to these trampoline days, the days that you're in right now. I would give anything just for a second to go back to that time when my kids were 11 and under. You know, right now they're, I had to think about this when I was driving down, but right now they're 25, 24, 23, 21, 21, 20, 18, 17, and 14. And I am on this motherhood journey with you. And because it's a journey, it is a marathon. It is not a sprint, right? It's actually, a lot of moms will say, yeah, I think about parenting like this. It's from diapers to diplomas. No. It is much, much, much longer than that, actually. And it's important to recognize where that finish line is. Because everything is different. Everything is different when the length of the race is different, right? It's true. The way we parent along the way is different if it's a 30-year timeline or if it's an 18-year timeline, right? You run a race differently if it is a 100-yard dash than you would if it was a 15-meter race, right? You would run differently. And so it's so critical that we understand from the get-go where our finish line is. You ever been watching the Olympics and you see a runner misread where the finish line is and they let up only to lose the race? I meet with moms on a daily basis, and I can tell you I see that happen all the time. If we believe the finish line is at 18, once they graduate, we really look at things differently than we would if they were 30 years old. For instance, if the finish line is 18, academics is very, very important to you. Every grade they get is important because they got to get into the best college, right? If you think 18 is a finish line, athletics are so important to you. Every home run they hit, every goal that they score is so important. But how many 30-year-olds are asked what their GPA is? How many 30-year-olds are asked how many home runs they hit? You see, as moms, God has called us to be good stewards of the children that he has entrusted to us, right? However, many of us, I think, look at our children or view it in a way that it's, oh, we actually own our children. We have an ownership over them, right? Ownership can provide a sense of responsibility, but actually it gives you an even greater illusion of control. But the truth is, parents have lots of influence, but no control over your children. Stewardship, on the other hand, looks at it very differently because they recognize, a good steward recognizes that God has entrusted us with something so valuable, so important, so that we want to give it our ultimate best care that we possibly can. We don't own them, we've just been given the privilege and the gift just to have them with us for a short while. And part of viewing stewardship is understanding our responsibility, and part of understanding that is understanding the long game parenting. Your end goal. What is it that you want for your children? So that's what we're going to talk about this morning. We're going to talk about parenting for the long game. I hope to offer you some practical insights, and I want to have fun along the way because I don't know if you know this, but being a mom is supposed to be joyful. It's supposed to be fun. And so I hope that we can do that this morning. Before we get to the good stuff, I want to start out with a little story that I think we're missing one here. Well, that's okay. That's okay. See, this is the way it works. But anyway, I'm going to start out with a story that all of y'all know. I hope you do anyway. It goes a little bit something like this. Once upon a time in a corn country, there was a beautiful girl named Rendersella. Now, Rendersella lived with her muggly other and her three sigliesters. Also in that same corn country, there was a prancing prince who decided to throw a bancy fall. And to the bancy fall, he invited the reeples from Riles Mound. But poor Rinderstella couldn't go, so she just sat down and tried. As she was kidding their shrine, along came her Gary Fodmother, who waved her wajik wand and appeared before Rinderstella, a gig boach, a Drancy fest, and Hicks White Sources, so she could go to the Bansy Fall after all. When Rinderstella gets to the Bansy Fall, the Prancing Prince was watching from a wooden hindo. They nanced all night long, and at last they lull and fub. But suddenly the mid-clock struck night, and Rinderstella stays down their airs, but just before she breached the rottom, she slopped her dripper. So the next day, the Prancing Prince went all throughout the corn country looking for the beautiful bull who slopped her dripper. He finally gets to Rinderstella's house. He tries the slop dripper on the muggly other. Fiddin' dit. He tried the slop dripper on the three sigly usters. Fiddin' dit. Then he tried the slop dripper on Rinderstella, and it fiddin' dit. It fiddin' dit. And a fatter of macked, it was exactly the sight rise. So the stroll of the Mori is, if you want a Prancing Prince to loll and fub with you, don't forget to slop your dripper. Now, as soon as I started that Terry fail, as I like to call it, you could instantly tell something was wrong. Something was off. It wasn't going as you thought it was going to be, right? And sometimes in life it is like that, but more often than not, it is not. It is a gradual, slow fade. Something not turning out the way that you want it to happened gradually over time, right? We don't purposely set out to have a lackluster marriage, do we? Most of us don't gain 20 pounds on purpose. We don't, I was going to say something about it. We don't strive to intentionally raise kids that are socially or emotionally immature, incapable, irresponsible, do we? No, I'm telling you though, I see this all the time with the moms that I meet every single day. We don't do it on purpose. That's the problem. We've got to parent on purpose. Have you ever heard the saying, if you don't know where you're going, you're liable to end up somewhere else? It's so true. The Bible says it this way, where there's no vision, the people perish or the people get out of hand. And in regard to our parenting, I don't want that to happen to your kids. I don't want your kids to get out of hand. But unfortunately, that is becoming more and more the norm. Children are in charge, and they're out of hand. They're out of control. Moms who are struggling to keep up, they're exhausted, overwhelmed, anxious, confused, uncertain of what to do, feeling like they're in a battle and the kids are winning, right? Feeling like they're missing the mark, like they're falling short. And I don't want today, I don't want you leaving here thinking, oh man, I've got to do one more thing. I'm falling short on this. Instead, I want you to leave encouraged, and I want you to leave empowered to maybe possibly go about parenting a little differently, or to encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. Because as Christians, we are called to live differently than the world, aren't we? We're supposed to stand out. And if you're parenting like your next door neighbor who does not know Jesus, you are not standing out. Romans 12:2 says, I don't know where these slides are going, but that's okay. Yeah, there you go. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Fix your attention on God. We don't want to live like that, do we? Being so well adjusted to our culture that we don't even think about it, that we're parenting like the rest of the world. We're called to swim upstream. That's why we tell our kids, hey, only the dead kids, not dead kids, sorry. Only the dead fish swim with the current. I told you I'm not perfect. The world parents for the here and now, but we are called to parent for the long term. And long game parenting looks very differently than the world does. It can give us a fresh set of eyes, a new perspective, and hopefully it will get you to look at your parenting role just a little bit differently. So, long game parenting is parenting as if your greatest priority is helping coach and develop and equip your children now for who you hope they one day become. Parenting them now for who you hope they one day will become. Because how you spend your time with your children now will impact who they are as adults. How you currently discipline them, how you're currently training them up, influences their future. So I want our time together to encourage you and just excite you as you leave here to look at your parenting and this gift that you have as a mom a little bit differently. And then I want us to look at it and say, is how I parent my child or my children today in alignment with what I hope for them in the future? So in order to value that, I want you to ask yourself, have you ever thought about what you hope for your flown and grown children? Have you ever really thought about it? What do you want for him or her? Have you spent some time with it? I would encourage you to sit down, and if you're married, to sit down with your husband and really pray about it, think about it, and create a long-term list or a goal of what you hope for your children when they are older. What do you pray for? What do you desire for when they are adults? And I don't mean like, oh, I want him to be a neurosurgeon, or at least married to one. I don't mean like, oh, I want her to live next door to me. That's not what I mean. What I'm talking about is the adult of character. Who they are when they become an adult. Who do you want them to become? His or her heart, right? Proverbs 4:23 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Everything you do. And if you believe that, which I firmly do, isn't that where our focus should be? Obviously, first and foremost, it goes without saying, I hope that you know this, we want, our goal was to raise children who love Jesus, who serve him with reckless abandon, and make a big difference in their little corner of the world. Matter of fact, if my kids were here and you were to ask any of them, hey, what were your parents' daily three goals that they had for you? They would write right off the bat, they want us to know, love, and serve God, they want us to stay close to each other, and they want us to seek joy in everything we do. So yeah, those are the things that we instilled from the get-go, early on. And then we also made a long-term goal, a long-term list of what we want for them to become. And then we looked at that as our barometer in our day-to-day parenting and how we choose to discipline, how we choose to train them. By the way, did you know that with every single parenting decision you make, either they are training you or you are training them? It's true. You're in the grocery store checkout line and your four-year-old son wants a candy that's right at eye level. And you don't want him to have candy because you're going right home to eat dinner, but you're like, oh, I don't want to upset him. I certainly don't want to cause a scene. And I don't want him to, you know, throw a temper tantrum on the floor. So you say, we'll see. Maybe in a little bit. And he continues to push and he continues to push. And so finally you just give in. And guess what? He just trained you up. If he bothers you long enough, he gets what he wants. But if you played that scenario again and your four-year-old's at that eye level with the candy and you say no, which, by the way, no is the most character-building word in the English language. No. Your kids need to hear no. Not maybe later, another time. They need to hear no. And if you said no and he throws himself on the floor right in the middle of the grocery store and you just step over him and look back as if you have no idea whose he is and you keep going, you have just trained him up in that moment. A couple things about this list as you're going through trying to come up with some things that you hope for your adult children. This list is not about raising perfect kids, and it is not about raising kids who make us proud. I hope that we love our kids with the unconditional love of our Heavenly Father like He loves us. And His last words on the cross were not, make me proud. But sometimes I think we parent that way. This list also isn't about being overly involved like a helicopter parent hovering over every single move that they make so that you can control who they are. Doing that, guess what, ladies? It only causes anxiety. It causes anxiety in you and in them. I'm driving in this morning. It took me over 2 hours to get here with the lovely traffic, and there's this big, huge sign that says anxious with a question mark and an arrow. I thought, well, welcome to Peachtree City. I don't know what that was about. And lastly, this list is not about wrapping up our identity in our kids so that they become attached to us and we are attached to them. With the help of the cell phone, increasing anxiety, and the shift from a marriage-centered home to a child-centered home, moms and children are more codependent than they've ever been before. I had the privilege of hearing a grown adult account some words at a funeral when her mom passed away, and she said, "Don't be sad for me. I'm excited for heaven. If I have attached you to me, then I've done a really bad job. I want you to be attached to Jesus. I want His word to be your food." And that was about 15 years ago, but I remembered it because that's what I want. I want my children to be attached to Jesus more than they are to me, because God forbid one day I will not be there. So what I want you to do is just take a second, and I want you to envision the kind of adult you want to raise. I don't know. Anyway, imagine the kind of adult you want to raise. There we go. Thank you. I might need just to have you do them for me. That would work. Great. I know it's hard for you to think about your 2-year-old or your 4-year-old or your 9-year-old or whatever it is at 30 years of age, but just try just for a minute. And I want you to think about some adjectives that you hope will describe them. And it is so important because, for instance, if you want autonomy for your child, you want them to be independent, capable, confident, and happy apart from you, it will impact how you parent them today, or at least it should. So when you're picturing your children at 30 or 40, I want you to think about them being somebody's next-door neighbor, somebody's coworker, somebody's wife, somebody who people will sit next to at the ballpark watching your kids. And when they score the winning goal or the home run, are they going to be humble? Or are they going to be arrogant and in your face? You see, it's hard to imagine our kids like that, but sooner or later you're going to blink and they will be an adult. And the question is, how will they be experienced by others? How will they be experienced by others? You know what I'm talking about. We all have that one neighbor that has no social awareness whatsoever. They dominate the conversation all the time and you avoid them to the best of your ability. Or you've been around men that you've heard other women say, could you imagine being married to him? Oh my gosh. Or the lady on your tennis team who makes excuses for every point in every match. It's everyone else's fault, but never your fault. Guess what? They were all children at one point, every single one of them. And if we could go back in time and we could see how they were raised, I bet we would go, oh, it makes sense. I see it. I understand that now. So what kind of adult child do you, what kind of child do you hope your child will become as an adult? What do you hope and pray for and desire for them? Now I want you to ask yourself, are my day-to-day parenting efforts aimed at producing a child that fits that description? Or am I more concerned with a short-term objective that have little to do with the person of character I hope they one day become? Like avoiding a temper tantrum in the grocery store because it was easier. Or teaching them they won't always be able to get what they want when they want it. You see, we live in an outward performance-driven society, and when our kids were young, I saw all kinds of people posting, oh, my child walked at 9 months, and oh my gosh, they got this award, principal pal. They, you know, hit a grand slam. And that's fantastic, right? I mean, those things are all worthy of celebration and getting excited about, but please don't misunderstand me. They are worthy of celebration as long as you understand that they are very nearsighted. They're very nearsighted. As an adult, they have no significance. I can promise you, I have three children that just graduated college and have real-world jobs. Not one of their employers asked them when they could walk. Not one of them asked what awards they got in high school or middle school. Not one of them asked, how many home runs did you hit? And my husband, I believe, although academic and even more so athletic success can be really, really fun, that's just it. It's fun. It's not going to be our focus because that's not part of our long-term list. It's fun, but it's not our focus. My dad used to tell me, I can tell you, Elizabeth, what's important to you if you give me two things. Give me your calendar and your checkbook. And I can tell you what your priorities are. So women, where do you spend your time, your efforts, and your money when it comes to your children? Show me that, and even though I don't know you, I can tell you what's important to you right now. I can tell you. I want to give you some personal examples for ours, just so you can kind of think through this as you're going. But for instance, my husband and I, we want to raise good citizens, contributing citizens to society when they're older. So right now, that means we want them to look around and we want them to be good employees. We want them, my middle school and high school kids that work, we want them to be good neighbors, a good friend, a great spouse, things that matter when they are adults. So with that in mind, we prayed about it. We said, hey, what is it that we want? And our top three goals for our kids are for them to be responsible and resourceful. And so I want us to look, well, first of all, let me just say this. None of these might be on your list. That's totally fine. There's not a good list and a bad list, a right list and a wrong list. Doesn't work that way. But I want us to look at the first one just so that you can see how we do this. We want our kids to be respectful. The older I get, the more I am convinced that, I believe that respect comes down to everything. It's the foundation on which you build for your children. So in our home, we only had three rules. That was it. There will be consequences. If we see disrespect, if we see dishonesty, or if we see disobedience, that's it. Three. We don't have lists and charts and chores and all these things kids can ever say. I couldn't remember. There's only three. And if you teach them respect, they're not going to want to be disobedient. They're not going to want to be dishonest, right? So let me ask you something. While we're talking about respect, because we want our kids to be respectful, we saw it in the video, and I'm not knocking the video because I actually love that video, but have you ever heard that it's important for your child to have self-esteem? It's so important. Don't hurt their self-esteem, right? I want you to understand that whole concept did not even exist before the 1960s, and for the most part, it's only an American character trait. Think about that. We're not supposed to parent according to the world, right? We're supposed to look different. So when it comes from the world, you kind of got to question it. But most people think that self-respect and self-esteem are the same thing. They are not. Let me tell you what self-esteem is. Self-esteem essentially means the esteeming of oneself, worshiping oneself, thinking more highly of yourself than you do others. Have you ever met anyone that thinks their time and their needs are important, more important than yours? I can tell you they have high self-esteem. Self-respect, on the other hand, develops as one treats others with respect. And as respect is given away, self-respect develops, and then it offers more respect to those around them. Have you ever met a man that speaks kindly to and of women? Looks for ways to serve them, hold the door for them? I can tell you, as a little boy, he was taught to respect girls. Have you ever met a man that's vulgar and crass talking about women? I can tell you that was once a little boy that got away with disrespect. A child here, this is interesting. A child develops self-esteem not by giving, but by getting. So let me ask you, how much do your children get? How much do your children get? Not just expensive clothes and the newest shoes and the iPad and all those things, but also how much do you do for your children? How much do you do for them? It's important because it is the difference between self-esteem and self-respect. And you see, self-esteem develops courtesy of others doing things for a child. And this is so important, don't miss this. As self-esteem grows, a respect for others diminishes. As self-esteem grows, self-respect for others diminishes. People with self-respect have generous and gracious hearts, grateful hearts. But those that have high self-esteem are selfish. They're entitled. And personally, I don't want my kids to think too highly of themselves. I can tell you that. We want to instill humility and honesty in them. Again, no one likes to be around a prideful or arrogant person, do we? A know-it-all? Nobody likes that. We don't like to work with them. We don't like to live next door to them. And it sounds harsh, but if you don't like those things, my next question is, what are you doing to make sure your child does not grow up to be an adult that you don't even want to be around? What are you doing today? And because respect is our number one goal for our kids, we look for opportunities to train up, to focus on and discipline in a way that teaches respect of siblings, of parents, of coaches. These can be things simple as, don't interrupt when you're on the phone. When I'm on the phone, please do not interrupt me. When I'm talking to someone else, please wait your turn. Don't barge in the bathroom door or the elevator or a bedroom door without knocking first. See, it's never too late, but it can be things that start as early as of 2 years of age. One thing that my husband required is that none of the five boys were allowed to be seated at the dinner table until all five females were seated. Not one of them would ever sit down to this day when they come home until all of us are seated. And this teaches my boys how to respect girls, but it also teaches my girls what it feels like to be respected so they will not put up when a boy tries to disrespect them later on. We taught them to always get on the bus last. It's just one simple way to think of others. Hey, you know what? It's okay. You go first. I don't need to barge on and pick the best seat. The simple, simple things, but it needs to be daily things. This was a huge one for us, huge. We taught our kids from as old as they could talk. If an adult or anyone else asks you a question, you answer the question, looking them in the eye, and you respond by asking them a question. Thinking of others. You wouldn't believe the bus drivers, the teachers, the cashiers that go, wow, I've never had a kid ask me how I was doing. It's unbelievable because it's so rare. One last thing I just want to say real quick about this this idea of self-esteem and self-respect, because I got so much information I had to get through, but this is so important. There's a social scientist by the name of Roy Baumeister. I don't know, I probably butchered it, but he's a smart guy. And for 10 years, he studied people with self-esteem. He looked at every background, every race, every denomination, every age that you could look at. And he wanted to see who had the most self-esteem. And would you believe the people that scored the highest by far? You ready for this? The people by far were those locked up in maximum security prisons. The inmate on death row. They had the highest self-esteem. I think about that every time I do something for my children and every time I give something to my children. And again, our desire to raise respectful adults affects our daily parenting. So quickly, I want to look at, we want our children to be responsible. We live up in the sticks in Forsyth County, and our schools haven't caught up yet to the mass influx. And so not everybody gets a parking space. And so when my son began to drive, it was summertime. He wanted to get a parking space. So the only way he could do it is if he spent the night all night long at the church next door, which was selling parking spaces for $500 piece. And so one thing I want to say, many parents spent the night in that parking lot so that their children could be at home asleep in their bed, but I'm not going to go off on that tangent. But he spent the night all night. He got about an hour of sleep. He had to leave there, go straight to football. After football, he had to go to his afternoon job, which was landscaping in the summer heat. And he texted me. He said, "Mom, I am exhausted. I only got an hour of sleep. I think I'm going to call in sick to work today." And I said, "Oh, you do, huh?" And he said, "Can I please?" I could have said, "Yeah, son, come home and sleep. That's fine." But let me tell y'all something. That would have been the easy thing. I know you're tired. You just come home. That's fine. But the better choice is always the one that has the greater value. Always. We have to do what is right as parents, not what is easy. You see, the short-term objective was sleep, but the long-term value was to teach him responsibility. And we all know that just because we've been up all night with a sick kid or we were out too late at a concert last night, we don't just get to call in late or call in sick to this thing of adulthood. Or momming, do we? We don't get to call in sick until we feel like showing up. But we're not raising them for the here and now. We're training them up for adulthood, and we have to parent today like we believe it. We want our children to be contributing members of society. And so that starts with being contributing members of our family. Right? 1961, President John F. Kennedy gave his famous speech where he said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." Likewise, being a good citizen of one's family, asking not what their family can do for them, but what they can do for their family. When's the last time your kids have said to you, "Hey, what can I do for you today, Mom?" Think about that. Keeping the long-term goal of being responsible at the forefront of our mind, we started assigning daily chores at the age of 3 in our home. And whoever's giving that chore workout, I think you should all go. The declaration in our home is when you become 8, you're no longer just a consumer, but you are a contributor. And they dread their 8th birthday. We have a whiteboard in our home. It's like the motherboard, Grand Central Station, that keeps my family running smoothly. I've had it for over 20 years, and I'm in the middle of a move, and we're moving tomorrow, actually. And so this is a really old picture, but this is my motherboard. And so it has my meals, it has activities, it has appointments, it has extra jobs because the chores that we give them, they do not get money for at all. And so that's the top part of my whiteboard, but the bottom part's my favorite. And it's because we clothe and feed you. They leave for school. Right after they leave for school, I write their chore, their non-paying chore, right next to it. And regardless of how busy they are that day, they have to get that chore done. If they do not get that chore done the next day, guess what? They get 2 chores, but they're much harder. That only has to happen once or twice, and it will not happen again. When they were little, they had to have their chore done before they sat down for dinner. That prevented me from having to nag, remind, "Did you do it? Did you do it?" They just didn't come to dinner if they didn't have their chores done. Then later they got older, they started going to all these activities, football, other sports. They didn't get home till after dinner. So then it was just, we had to adjust, pivot, and then it was just, you have to have it done by the time you go to bed. So in addition to chores building responsibility, on that video it said it also builds confidence and independence. I cannot emphasize enough how important it is for chores. If your children tell you they can't do something, they're too young, they're too little, ask your grandparents what they were doing for chores when they were your kids' age. Ask them. You'd be surprised. A lot of moms, will come to me and say, "Oh my gosh, but it's just, you know, it's so much easier for me to do it myself." Yes, it is. It is. Other moms tell me, "Well, they're not going to do it as well as I can do." They will not. When my kids started cleaning bathrooms at 8, I can tell you it was not done to my ability. It was not done to my standards, right? But if I truly want to raise kids that are responsible, contributing members of society, is it more important to do what's easiest and best for me or for my child? The last example I want to give is we want our children to be resourceful. Resourcefulness is that, like, figure it out mentality. You can do it on your own. And every single one of us know that our kids are going to face challenges in this life. They're going to. So my husband and I decided that we want to prepare our children for those hardships. We wanted to prepare our children for the road and not the road for our children. So many parents are lawnmower parents, just clearing the path everywhere they go to make it easy for their kids, handling everything for them. But we want them to figure it out on their own. You see, not too long ago, children made it their goal not to get their parents involved. But today's parents are involved in almost every aspect of their kids' lives. I'm not saying I don't want you to be involved, but I think it's more important that we're attentive and not overly involved. You can be interested and attentive without being overly involved. Our over-involvement and our micromanaging of our kids' lives and their worlds hinders their learning and hinders their ability to become resourceful later on. See, our grandparents and our great-grandparents understood that their main objective was to raise adults who could stand on their own two feet, and they can't stand on their own two feet if they're always standing on yours. They can't. It's our job and our responsibility to raise our children to independence. But yet what I see on a daily basis is moms thinking it's their job to always be there for their kids. I've got to be there for them. And parents that have always been there for their kids find it next to impossible to stop doing it later on. And just to be clear, if you don't have an 18-year-old, these life skills don't just appear by magic on the night of their 18th birthday, like somehow they're going to know how to do all of these things. It doesn't work that way. Childhood is meant to be the training ground for independence. Moms tell me all the time, oh, but they're so young, they're so little, you know. Besides, I enjoy doing everything for them. I'm going to stop later on, I promise, but just right now, you know, I enjoy doing it. And then you think that one day you will stop over-functioning for your children, which, by the way, I want to quickly tell you, over-functioning is doing for your children what they can and should be doing for themselves. Over-functioning is doing for your children what they can and should be doing for themselves. I want to give you some real-life examples, but I have to go quick so we can stay on time. But I think they're important to tell you some of them because it's true. You just think, oh my gosh, like I promise I won't always do this. My oldest, I'm just going to say this real quick. My oldest four children went to University of Georgia, and I say that only to prove the point that it's a hard school to get into. Bright kids go there. I have never seen more parents overcompensating and overfunctioning for their kids because they cannot do it in my entire life. I went to my son's orientation his freshman year. We're walking in, and the administrator guy, whatever he is, was saying, hey, one pamphlet per child. Parents, you may not get one. So the lady in front of me comes in, no kid around her. She asks for the pamphlet. He says, no, where's your child? She goes, he couldn't make it this weekend. He didn't feel like coming. She was at his freshman orientation for him at University of Georgia. I go in to sit down at the orientation. I sit next to this lady I kind of know, but not really. I say, oh, where's your son? Oh, he overslept. He couldn't make it this morning. At orientation, my daughter Libby is at GCSU. She, after about a month, said to her roommate, I thought you had a car here. She said, I do. And she said, but I have never seen you leave. She goes, it's out of gas. And she goes, do you need money? She goes, no, I have money. And she goes, then why don't you get gas? She goes, I've never gotten gas before. I don't know how. Her dad did it for her. Y'all, she's 19 years old. I mean, I could keep going and going. My son was telling me that his senior year of high school, his football player friends, their moms were laying out their clothes for them. Seniors in high school, setting their alarms, making sure they're getting up. Guess what? Now they're in college. They can't get up on their own. They sleep in through orientation. Y'all, these are all college kids who didn't have to do it for themselves when they were at home, out of love or out of ease, whatever it might be. Their parents overfunctioned for them and ultimately hurt them and crippled them in the long run. And these are all parents who had children that were your kids' ages once. Do you think for a million years that would happen? They couldn't cut the cord. I just went to the beach with my best friends, and when we get together, we talk about fun stuff and we laugh, but we also talk about heart stuff, dreams, regrets, things we wish we could do differently, things that we loved. We champion each other and cheer each other on. And my best friend has four daughters, and she cried one night, and she was a single mom. She said, I was too overly involved in my kids' lives. And not only did it cripple them, but it stole so much from me emotionally, mentally, and physically by being over-involved and compensating as a single mom. Another friend of mine has three grown kids, and she got teary-eyed. And she said, out of love for my kids, I continued to over-function for them. And now that they're adults, guess what? When their employee or employers and roommates don't overfunction for them, they can't handle it. They can't handle it, and they're freaking out. Do you want to have emotionally resilient, strong children? Don't intervene, don't fix, and don't overdo for your kids. You see, over-involvement and micromanaging and doing too much for our kids ultimately just hurts them in the long run. I don't want your kids to go away and you're like, oh my gosh, good luck, right? I went off to college, y'all, get this, without Google. Without Google, I figured it out because my parents made me figure it out at home. I recently did a podcast on bird launching. Most people like to call it empty nesting, but I think that sounds kind of sad, like something's missing. So it's like you're launching a water balloon or a bird. It's a little more exciting, right? It is. But before you know it, you're going to blink and you will launch your children out into adulthood. And my prayer is that you will have very, very, very few regrets. I don't want you to drop your kids off to college and say to the roommates, I'm so sorry, I did the best I could. Right? I met with a woman last week that told me she has so many regrets that she calls her son's roommate on a weekly basis to apologize for what she gave him. Can I help? Can I get a cleaner? I know he's messy. I know he's lazy. I know he won't lift a finger. He'll leave his wet towel on the floor. His water bottle's empty. What can I do for you? She calls him once a week. I'm just telling you, it is the saddest thing to me. So that's why I love talking to moms your age. I'm like, y'all got time. You got time. Don't let the slow fade of parenting infiltrate the way you parent on a daily basis. We've got to parent on purpose now. There's different ways to reach an end goal, but for me, I like to find the goal and then kind of work backwards. And so in addition to the list that we have, my question to you is, what do you hope that your children will be prepared for when they fly the nest? What is it that you hope for them, that they will know how to do all by themselves, that you've equipped them well for? One year when our kids were young, we read a book called Cleaning House. It was so fantastic, How to Rid Your Home of Entitlement. And so we took 1 month to focus on one thing that we wanted them to know how to do really well once they flew the coop. And for 1 month, that's all we focused on. And to this day, they know how to do all those things, and they're grateful. Could you imagine going off to college and experiencing all these new things for the first time and not knowing how to do your laundry, not knowing how to cook, not knowing how to get gas in your car? They're already going to be experiencing so many new things. What is it that you want them to know how to do now so that they can do it later? It's important to know, because it's, again, self-esteem and self-respect. The two differences is how much you give and how much you get. We want our kids to be doing more for themselves, not less. So as we wrap up, I just want to offer a few important tips to help your child succeed later on in life when it really, really matters. And because your children are younger, like I said, you still have time to help prepare them for the real world and adulthood. And it will also help ease your concerns that you've done the best to your ability. So the first one, I hope I don't step on anybody's toes, is park the helicopter. Park the lawnmower. Please do not helicopter your child. Please do not lawn mow for your child, right? You might think they're young and they just need you so much, but the truth is, some of us like being needed by them. We're getting a need met through our kids. But you see, toddlers fall when they learn to walk. They do, right? They fall down, they get back up, they try new strategies, they build more muscles in their legs. But if we never let go of their hands as they're walking, and we never let them fall, they would never have that experience of them toddling all the way to your arms with such excitement and accomplishment as they give you a hug as they walk for the first time. We've got to let them fall. We've got to. And I know many of us have good intentions, but we as moms are causing more harm than good. I once heard a story about a camping trip where dad was taking the son on the camping trip, and the mom said, I'm just worried he's not going to have enough to eat. I'm going to pack some snacks. I'm just going to put some things. And he said, do not pack anything. I've got it under control. I know, but I'm just worried about him. And long story short, the lady put in some snacks. The mama put some snacks in his backpack. That night, they're sound asleep. The dad wakes up to a bear ripping their tent apart to get to the food. She did it because she loved him. She did it because she wanted what was best for him, but all too often we get in their way so many times. And I know that parents mean well when they do things like that, but what it is proven to communicate your child is that you love them, but you don't think that they're capable of doing it themselves. That's what it communicates. We're to be their biggest cheerleaders. So park the helicopter, park the lawnmower, and run alongside them as you're cheering them along all the way to the finish line. Number two, do not bail, let them fail. We tend to place so much emphasis and so much importance on what's happening today on these younger years. Like it's the end of the world if they forget their lunch. It's the end of the world if they forget their project or their homework or their uniform, their after practice jersey. Y'all, natural consequences are an excellent way to teach responsibility and to take ownership of their actions. But parents are so quick to step in and bail them out whenever they make a mistake, doing homework for them, taking up all those things I just talked about to school. But bailing your children out teaches them nothing about taking ownership for their actions. Nothing. So please, let them fail while they're still living in your home. Don't let their first failure be when they're out on their own all by themselves. Again, what's your end goal? What's your end desire? Do you want your children to one day be independent? If so, we got to act accordingly today like we really mean it. Let them take ownership of their rooms, their belongings, their schooling. Last I checked, I bet all of y'all already graduated. Let them have the full experience because it's their third grade. It's their seventh grade. It is not yours. You can give counsel and you can give guidance, but do not be doing their schoolwork for them, micromanaging their homework, their alarm clocks. I can tell you, they know how to work a cell phone, an iPad, all of those things. They can work an alarm clock. Don't tell them. Don't let them tell you they can't. And the last one is, as hard as it might be, do less for your child, not more. Do less for your child, not more. Somehow we have bought into this lie as parents that the more we do for them, the better the mom we are. Y'all, I'm just telling you, it's a lie. If you don't take away anything else from anything I say, please remember this. Just because we can do, provide, or give doesn't mean we should. Just because we can do, provide, or give doesn't mean we should. Learn from my friend's tearful over-functioning regrets. You want to raise grateful children? Anybody in here want to raise a grateful child? Do less for them, not more. Anybody want to raise competent, capable, confident, independent children? Do less for your child, not more. You want to raise children that have respect for others? Do less for your child, not more. You want to raise dependable, reliable children? Do less for your children, not more. As a mom of eight kids, I can tell you, with six of them being launched already, having children isn't the hard part. Letting them go is. Letting them go is the hard part. Because here's the thing. A mom's job is to teach her children not to need her anymore. And the hardest part of it is accepting that success. Our job is to teach them not to need us anymore. And the hardest part is accepting that success. Y'all, being a parent, being a mom is one of life's greatest gifts. It's denied to so many. If you are in this room because you have a child or two or four, whatever it is, it's a blessing. It's a gift. And I hope that every single one of us will steward our children that God has entrusted to us to the best of our ability. And I hope that you will consider looking at long game parenting, not just the here and now, and that you will create a vision for what it is that you hope for your grown children later on in life. And then make that your number one priority every single day when you're making a parenting decision. Tell me what's more important than the well-being of your kids. What is more critical than the legacy that you will leave long after you're gone that can impact multiple generations to come? Be consistent. Don't let up. Because the finish line, we'll be here before you know it. Thank y'all so much for letting me be here with y'all. I really appreciate it.